lucky this heat.
The dogs are barking all up and down the street.
My feet are like two hot bricks.
I'm like a hot potato wrapped in foil and sweltering from every orifice and porifice.
My doorknobs have melted, so I can't leave my house.
Well, how are you going to strip?
I've stripped down to my bones, Lucky, and I'm still on fire. Well, Lucky, do you feel like cooling down a little bit, maybe?
Of course. It's anything to stop this oppressiveness.
Do you feel like relaxing?
Always. I relax every time we record.
Well,
I put no effort into this.
Well, I guess you're in luck, because this is not just a plucky intro bit about the heat. It's also a coup.
What?
Yeah, I'm taking over the show. I'm gonna pick the next book. I'm gonna edit the show. I'm gonna put in fun shock jock sound effects when there's long silences. Yeah, like maybe there would be a good plot. I'll figure it out later, though.
I guess I don't get why you're calling it a coup, though. It sounds like you're just giving me some time off as, you know, the editor, the consummate professional.
Well, just because it's a takeover doesn't mean it's a hostile takeover. Lucky, why don't you check under your chair?
Yeah, sure. Give me a second. What the hell?
Yep, that's right. It's an adult tropical beverage. Do you know why you're drinking a tropical beverage?
Because of the coup, I guess?
Yep, that's right, Lucky. It must be
the summer of the Mac.
Welcome to the Gentleman's Romantic Book Nook. It's the summer of love with your faithful and tender co-hosts. I am Mac W. Monty, and with me, as always,
I'm the tender one. It's Lucky here in beautiful Portland.
The planes are soaring overhead with banners strung high. The summer of the Mac has begun, and I know, Lucky, that this being the
summer of the Mac,
you're probably wondering why. Why, God, in all your infinite wisdom, why?
You're just repeating exactly what I said in our production meeting, so I guess you might as well tell the people what's happening.
I can see the questions pouring out of your every porifice.
And orifice.
Mm-hmm. But the questions are there. I can see them written all over your face. You're wondering, maybe, what are we going to be doing? What are we going to be reading?
Does
we even have a book lined up?
Does it mean I finally get my Sundays back?
No, no, and no. I do have a book lined up, but I will not reveal it until the end of the episode. Instead, you and I, Lucky, we get to take some time off, unwind, summer vacation, right?
Okay, great. That's awesome. I was thinking drinking this is going to be a really tough thing while I'm also trying to deal with a book, but I'm glad I have a second. What are we going to be doing instead?
We're going to play video games.
Oh, shit. The best summer pastime. Are you kidding me right now?
Here's a hint, Lucky. We are going to be playing a romantic two-person adventure game that takes two to make it work.
Operation Tango.
No. Let me give you another hint.
Okay.
It takes a number to make it right. Takes both of us to keep it tight.
Okay, but
I won't get sued for copyright. Welcome to our It Takes Two review. For those of you who don't know, It Takes Two is a two-person cooperative adventure game where players take on the roles of Cody and May, a couple on the brink of divorce. To cope with this, their daughter crafts two dolls of her parents and makes believe that they are reconciling through the help of a relationship book. The stakes rise when May and Cody find themselves trapped inside their daughter's dolls and must navigate the perilous and magical domain of their house, yard, and loveless marriage. Guided and taunted by the anthropomorphic Book of Love, Dr. Hakim, they must fight and explore and eventually come face to face with the real problems in their marriage. Themselves? Lucky, now you played as May, the uptight, never there, working too hard, the problem with the marriage. And I played as Cody, the husband, pretty much flawless.
Right. Just like our friendship, I think we really fell into the roles of these two characters. And just like them, they really didn't reconcile their fight. And after said coup or divorce, things might really just fall apart.
Must be the summer of the Mac.
Yeah, first impressions on the game. Playing May was really interesting. I like the dynamic of playing a full game together. Full disclosure, you and I had actually attempted a game by the studio before where we were each playing somebody who were trying to break out of a prison. And that game, like, we just did not get into. It was very slow pace. I didn't really like the characters. I actually enjoyed this game quite a bit. I mean, story and characters aside, what a game to play.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the problems I had with A Way Out, their first game, came down to style. Like, the mechanics of it worked fine, but I didn't really care about the world or the setting. It was very grounded in reality, whereas It Takes Two is fantastic. It's adventure. It's stylized. You're these fun little dolls who actually look nothing like our adult counterparts.
That was quite the moment, the fact that they looked so different than the actual people. I know that they were trying to characterize their flaws in that moment to show, oh, this is kind of what the consciousness is and how the daughter feels about them. So I believe she made these dolls for them, or at least in her mind represents the parents as such. And we just get this like dumpy clay man and this kind of uptight yarn woman playing these characters.
Well, May becomes this sort of cute, blue-haired, lovely-looking doll. It doesn't look like her, but it's lovely. But yeah, Cody becomes this hunk of clay all around tubby boy.
Also, for some reason, it seems he becomes clumsier. He's bumbling around the stage while, you know, May, when she's doing her acrobatics, is flipping and diving and perfectly turning. And Cody, you know, kind of trips and falls into a tube and, you know, stumbles his way through. Very rude.
And their relationship is on the fartin' rocks. They do not like each other. They spend the whole game arguing, which actually works pretty well for a co-op game where you need two people to get anything done. There were times where I would get a little frustrated and we would kind of quip at each other. And it was kind of like we were going through a divorce, Lucky.
What was nice was we were able to channel that energy into the game. So, you know, yeah, it was very quippy. But when something would happen, it would be very frustrating. Like, ah, yeah, well, that's why they're getting a divorce. And Cody needs to get his shit together. And May needs to stop being so controlling. You know, I guess for us, it was a nice outlet for game frustration.
The antagonist of the game is sort of the hatred that they feel for each other. But in a much more real sense, the villain is Dr. Hakim, the anthropomorphic book who's essentially putting them through the ringer, trying to get them to reconcile their marriage.
I certainly hated this character right off the bat from seeing him because of the terrible accent that is both French, Spanish, and Hispanic all at the same time.
Is the word troubling? Problematic would be the word.
Yeah,
because he takes you all over the world with that accent. His name is Dr. Hakim, so you think maybe you understand where he's from or why the accent. But then, no, the accent is, like, extremely Spanish.
I thought of, like, telenovelas. The narrator from Jane the Virgin was the voice, the person that popped in my head when Dr. Hakim first spoke.
Yeah, it almost sounds like someone trying to do a French accent, but the person who's trying has only ever eaten French fries. That's as close as they've gotten to actually hearing a French person talk.
They had an au jus sandwich once, and it changed their life completely, and they dedicated themselves to learning and loving French, but gave up at the learning and stuck with the loving.
They tried au jus from Arby's once, and they sort of know what they're talking about.
Their beefy five-layer dip is perfect.
Although the book being really annoying kind of worked for me, because every time he shows up, both the player and the characters were like, ugh, really? Like, again?
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the story in this game, no matter how fun it was to actually play. But yeah, that book showing up, it was fun to kind of grunt and groan about him and hope that at the end, maybe he was the big bad villain.
One of the central conceits of the game is that in every level, Cody and May both have different abilities that change every single world and are complementary to each other. And they have to learn to work together in order to make progress. So, for example, in the first world, May has a hammer. And she can, like, nail things with it. Cody has Thor-like nails, which he can throw and it hits stuff and then retracts back to him. So I feel like you got the short end of the nail on that one.
Shorter than the nail. Yeah, the dichotomy between the powers at points felt very uneven. I think there were moments where the powers balanced out. You know, we had, I forget, the matchstick grenade launcher. Coupled with the oil glob bomb was a very cool power combination, and running through the trees and fighting bees, you know, very fun level. But yeah, the hammer was so disheartening right when the game started. You know, we're in this fantasy world where toys, you get amazing nails and incredible powers. And here I am, you know, smashing my hammer.
On average, Cody has the better set of powers. A couple times I was a little disappointed, but even when I was disappointed, yours were always more disappointing.
Yeah, whenever I had a low, it was a low, low, you know.
I don't want to go through them all, but Lucky, what were some of your favorite powers that May got, that you got?
I think the water vine combo was my favorite power combination. There was so much we did in the yard that was so much fun that having the vine to attack and then having this kind of spray ability had me interacting with the environment, I think, most of all the different levels. And that's being said, you know, we're interacting all over the place. Those levels were absolutely crazy. But yeah, I felt very, very strongly about that one. How about yourself?
It's funny you say that because I actually agree with the garden level probably has my favorite Cody ability. In that one, Cody has the ability to become different types of plants. And specifically in one part, he becomes grass that can like maneuver its way across the landscape, and I have to like help you stay on the grass to avoid, you know, enemies and stealthing through. And that was super cool and fun.
Yeah, that was incredibly interactive. There's I can tell you the power I hated the most, which was the clone, the most useless Mei power, where you kind of make this shitty clone that just stands there, where the dichotomy, you got time powers to reverse tragedies and have eons pass by the flick of your fingers.
That was one where I think they were trying to tie in the themes of the game to the powers, like Mei can't be in two places at once.
Mm.
So she needs clone powers. But it just wasn't fun to use. But we're not here to talk about video games. We're here to talk about romance. So let's focus on the romantic elements of the game, the relationship between Cody and Mei, because I think that's almost part of what suffers in this. You see a lot of reasons why they should not be together. And by the end of the game, they sort of come around to a different conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned earlier, the entire time they're just snipping at each other, bickering. They're quick to dole out an insult, and the compliments come few and far between. It doesn't really feel like anything even progresses. And I remember playing, since we played this in multiple sessions, thinking, you know, or even talking about, well, they're not getting back together. They hate each other still, and we're 90% through this game. At some point, something's going to give. And even, you know, the conclusion, the way it ended up, it didn't feel like... It didn't give me that conclusion that I guess I wanted through this, was them resolving it or coming to some sort of conclusion.
It didn't feel earned.
Yeah.
At the end when they, spoilers, got back together.
And even then, kinda. Because they never explicitly like had a big kiss and said, we're married, everything's perfect. They kind of were just like, it's fine, daughter, we're here and we're together.
They were really good at fighting with each other, but I don't see any real affection between them. The times that they connect are like, oh, remember when we went on that ski honeymoon? It's just like that. But like, why? How did you connect? In what ways do your personalities interact with each other that make you a good couple?
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers, yeah. They don't. And then the book comes flying in to try and tie the lesson somehow into it.
The book's coming in to tie the lessons together, but then also throwing them problems. This book is the anti-hero.
Well, the couple are also pretty awful. Cody and Mei do some pretty atrocious things on the road to getting back to their bodies.
Yeah.
Because it's worth noting, while they're stuck in the dolls, their bodies don't just disappear. They're in like a coma-like state. One of them, I think, sitting in a chair and the other one laying on the couch. And their little girl is just like, Mommy, are you all right? Come play with me.
Multiple times the little girl interacts with both parents who are in comas. It's so funny. Who's feeding this child? The game took us, you know, 10 hours about. This kid was alone running around for this amount of time trying to figure out how to live and survive. Terrifying. No wonder, spoilers again, she tries to run away.
Yeah, meanwhile, the dad's body is sitting in his desk chair, you know, pissing himself. Nobody's hasn't eaten food in 12 hours, hadn't had a drink of water. It's a hot summer day. He could die.
Just like us.
I don't think anyone could review It Takes Two without talking about this particular traumatic scene. And I say traumatic because I think about it still, and the game sort of pushes you into an action that I would describe as macabre.
Yeah, I call it trunkmatic because of how rough it was when the elephant princess met her untimely murder.
Mei and Cody's daughter's favorite toy is an elephant royaltine, I believe is the term. And in order to get the magical tears from their daughter's face holes, from her porifices, if you will, they decide the only way to do that, to turn back into humans, is to murder this anthropomorphic toy to make their daughter cry. Now, that's good parenting and good relationship advice. Oh, no, wait, it's shitty both.
I also want to mention the fact that they don't know that's going to work. That's not something that they were told, you have to do this.
Nope.
They come to the conclusion absolutely apropos of nothing. And I think there's even a moment where Dr. Hakim's like, whoa, I don't know if this is the way you want to go. This maybe isn't the best plan. And in the process of murdering this elephant, which they decide they're going to throw her off of a huge cliff, they're ripping parts off of her. I mean, they rip her arm off. They decimate her in a terrifying way while she's begging for her
life. Screaming, help, help, please, no, I don't want to die.
Yeah, and we have to control and keep playing. I remember talking to you about this, like, do we stop? Is there a way to not do this?
Spoilers, there's not. Some things you just have to do to save your marriage, like make your daughter weep. Which she does after they kill this elephant, after they murder this elephant, elephanticide.
Nice. And then they're dancing joyously while she's crying, like in her tears as if it were a shower. They're not good people.
No, but you like them anyway because they're kind of plucky. And I think that this game has gotten a lot of criticism, rightly so, for its characterizations and its maybe lack of a positive story. But honestly, it's a fun little indie game that doesn't ask that much of it. I think that because the gameplay is so good, people wanted the characterization to be as good, which I don't know was ever going to be the case, because they wanted a game that, yeah, you could play with your kids of a certain age or with adults. And I think to cross that and not make it so complicated, they had to simplify the issues that the parents face. So I give the game a pass on its story and plot, because the point is not that. You're lucky that it's so deep. People call it shallow, but they're lucky it's as deep as it is for how, you know, little they would have had to do, really.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think, you know, unequivocally, it's the best co-op game out there in the moment. So I'm going to have to give this one a pass.
Yeah, easily the best co-op game, the best couch co-op game since Portal 2, which has been some time.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly.
It's worth noting, we're not shills for the studio that made this at all, but I think it's really cool what they do, that if you want to play with a friend who, you know, lives across the country or across the world, only one of you has to buy a copy of the game, and the other person can just download a friend copy, and you can play the whole game together through one copy, which I think is a really generous move, because people would have paid twice for it. Yeah. It's worth it.
That's a regular GOBN tip of the hat to you.
Tip of the hat, ding!
Yeah, I forgot to tell you, during this process while you're taking over, I decided in this one recording, I'm going to start really throwing in some characters and catchphrases just to shop them out.
Well, lucky, it is the summer of the Mac, so you now have time to sit back, relax, come up with quirky characters. Maybe it's not Lucky. Maybe you have like an evil twin named Unlucky or Anti-Lucky.
His name is Mick, actually.
Sounds a lot like Mac.
He does, doesn't he?
Chills. And I could really use some chills because of, again, the extreme heat we're going through here in PNW right now.
I'm sitting in a swamp.
I feel like I'm in the butthole of a swamp.
Like there must be a place where the swamp comes from. And I feel like that's where I'm sitting as the swamp water falls from below.
You mean Washington, D.C. Rimshot.
Wow. Summer of the Mac, indeed.
The Summer of the Mac continues next week with a brand new book here at the Gentleman's Romantic Book Nook. Lucky, are you ready for the big reveal?
Hit me with it. Slap me with it. Big Mac Daddy.
We are heading to the city.
Great.
Where, you know what sells better than anything else?
Churros.
Well, okay, I could really, that sounds amazing, but that's number two. Sex, Lucky, sells. So we are going to have some sex in the city.
Oh, great. We're dealing with people who look all different, all sexy with each other. I'm into it. It's been a while.
Yes, we are diving into Candace Bushnell's collection.
I'm sorry, did you say Candace Bush Smells?
Okay, well, don't editorialize me now. She has a lot of army of powerful lawyers and HBO behind her. We have a fan that's not plugged in at the studio right now. This will be our first dive into nonfiction. We're not going to read the entire book, just some selections from that. This is the book that started the cultural phenomenon of Sex and the City, including the feature films. I believe it's coming back to HBO. And, do you want to ask me why I chose it? Lucky, why don't you ask me why I chose this book?
Well, it's going to be like that this time, huh? Okay, yeah.
The Summer of the Mac.
So why did you choose this book?
I refuse to answer that question.
Holy fuck.
No, I wanted to take, so we often call this show a journey into love in literature. And sometimes we play it safe and sometimes we pick books we might not like. I don't like Sex and the City, the show. I've seen like two episodes and I don't like it, but it's very popular and it has a huge, enormous following among people. And it's even people who don't never even seen an episode of the show. You say Sex and the City and they know what you mean. So I thought, let's read something that we really like would have to journey through in order to understand something a little different outside of our realm of time traveling cowboys and alternate realities where everything is a selection.
Consider me at full mast for something more normal.
Consider me at half mast.
Oh, half maxed.
Half maxed. I will be the cabin Mac. No, it's the summer of the Mac. I'm the captain. You're the cabin boy. Get back up on the front of the ship.
Well, if anything, wouldn't I be the luxurious passenger? You're trying to move from Europe over to America because they have money, and you're trying to maybe swoon me, seduce me and money away, but you actually, you know, Jordan's somewhere in that ship, and you guys are actually in love. I'm trying to write the romance here that we will inevitably publish after Summer of the Mac.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize it was the summer of the lucky. Well, we're in international waters now, bucko, so maybe, you know, put on your big boy pants and swab the deck.
Must be the summer of the Mac.
And that's it. Episode over.
We got it.
Is that good? That was good. I'll turn these fucking fans on.